Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you. How are you this afternoon, man?
I am doing great. Excited about today's show.
Hey, fun. Later in the program, we are going to get a chance to visit with a master instructor in self-defense and fitness training. We're also going to visit with Andy Davies. He's with Flex. But first up, on the High Velocity Radio Show this afternoon, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the Vice President of Aventus Systems. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Mr. Carl Pearl. How are you, man?
I'm doing well, guys. Thank you for having me today, and I look forward to spending a few minutes with you.
And Carl, can you kind of remind our listeners what Aventus Systems does? How do you serve the community?
Oh, great question. So if you look at Aventus Systems, we are a IT company, and we provide new and refurbished high-quality hardware for customers. We also offer software as well as services and support. We've been around since 2008, founded by Hassam LeMay, and since 2008, we've grown the business from bootstrap all the way up to $16 million of recurring revenue annually. So we feel like we do a great job in the market, and we've got a global footprint.
Now, is your work primarily selling equipment and hardware, or have you moved more into kind of the managed services and the IT side of things?
So our core business still remains hardware as well as software. But if you look at us, our services have moved over to more managed services as well as cloud and cloud applications.
Mm-hmm. So how'd you get into that?
So for us, it was a natural segue. A lot of our customers were looking at hardware, and then what they found was that their hardware requirement wasn't such that they needed hardware. They prefer to have someone host them. And so we decided back in 2010 to start looking at that as a venture for us. And we went full-fledged right around 2012. So around 2012, 2013, we went into managed services, hosted services, and we really have put a full court press in that space, because a lot of customers today look at it as a viable option, and we do as well for many of our smaller and mid-sized market clients.
But that's pretty competitive, right?
Very. Actually, it's a space where if you look at the larger enterprise companies, they're going into, be it Microsoft's cloud or some of the other cloud providers out there. But for Aventus, for us, for our customers, a lot of our mid-sized customers are running a hybrid anyway. So it's a natural fit for us. But from a price point, we're very competitive.
You're kind of agnostic, right? You're not tied to one system?
Correct. So today, if you look at our hardware, we do Dell, HP, and Cisco. We can go out and get other hardware, but from what we offer to our clients, we're agnostic. We're not locked into one particular vendor. We prefer to work with all the OEMs out there in the space, which gives us a lot of leverage in the market. So it's advantageous for us.
Now, can you share some ways that the small business owners can leverage IT?
So yeah, a lot of us spend time talking about your business plan. You talk about everything except for, what am I going to do with my data? How do I correlate my data or bring it together so that it's very useful? And with IT in our space, we find that we can help to lower your cost, your entry point, be it with hardware being refurbished or new. Or if you go into the cloud, then obviously we're able to bring that cost down even more. So if you look at IT as a component of your business versus a asset to your business, we believe we can help many clients deliver their overall product to the market. Everything from data backup to restoration, if you include in that the ability to just deliver the content in the manner that you like, IT is really the place that's going to help you do that.
Can you share some stories maybe that you've helped some clients save some money?
So if you look today, I've got a customer out in Washington, Klamath County specifically, and they came to us with a requirement for hardware, and we built a solution. That solution saved them. The solution ended up being around $200,000, but if we were looking at new, that price point would have been north of $400,000. So from their perspective, it really helped them with lowering their cost and delivering their services to their end user. From a business perspective, I've got a client that serves the Northeast, and his business is primarily financial. And what we did, we came up with a solution. We kind of changed what he was using for his in his IT in his racks. So we went from Dell to HP. He was not familiar with the hardware, but today he's much more comfortable now with the solution that we provided him. And we see recurring revenue from him in the area of $170,000 to $200,000 annualized. So it's one of these things where if you build it right, your customers come back. They appreciate what you've done for them. From an efficiency standpoint, our client, again, the one in the Northeast, is delivering to his financial customers a much more robust solution. He's actually delivering in a faster manner. Here locally, I got another customer that we just fell in love with these guys. They really are, from a business perspective, able to save their customers money by looking at their bills monthly. And they look at those anomalies within their bills and billing cycles with their business partners. And they're able to do this with us. They were probably doing, it seemed like it was a very slow process for them. But the minute we went in, we looked at their infrastructure, we looked at how they were delivering their service to their clients. We gave a recommendation, and to give you a scale and scope, their business went from where they were producing, if you were saying 100,000 transactions in 2 hours, to now they're doing almost 500,000 transactions in a half an hour.
Wow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was game changing.
It was.
And for them, it allowed them to lower their costs, at the same time deliver a much more robust solution to their client. And now they're looking to roll that out globally. So if you do
but
it
now
right,
they have the infrastructure to do that. Previously they probably couldn't have.
They couldn't scale, correct.
Right.
And so again, from a lowering of their operational costs, we're able to bring much more value to them and their end user.
So now, how much of your work is spent kind of consulting with them to make sure that you can craft the right kind of system that's going to help them grow and scale? You got to really know what their goals are and what their current and future state is going to be in order to serve them properly, right?
Correct. So we start with a very simple model in that we want to be one-to-one with our customers. And what we'll do is we'll sit with them, we'll talk about not just, say, 2017, and we do this year to year. So in October of last year, we sat down with many clients and said, okay, let's talk and walk through 2017. What is it that you'd like to do with your business? And then what we'll do is we'll get an idea of their topology, which is their infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And we will, at that point, come back to them and say, hey, given your topology, given where you want to go, here's some of our recommendations. And what we do is we put that pre-sales engineer in front of them to walk through the recommendations versus here's a salesperson telling you you should upgrade.
Right.
It's really engineer to engineer, and then engineer and salesperson to the business, and working with them to grow and scale their business model.
And then once you've implemented a system, how much time do you spend kind of checking in on them to make sure that it's doing what it's supposed to do? How important is that as part of your process?
I think that is probably one of the most critical components, in that it's easy to go out as a salesperson or a business and sell your product. But I think when you look at quality says that really I should be following up with you after delivery within 30 to 60 days, then following up continually throughout the period and life cycle of you executing with the hardware. So we probably spend, on average, at least one touch per quarter with every customer. Mm-hmm. That's one-to-one with our
right, customers. Whereas a lot of vendors are like, yeah, I sold it and see you later.
I'll see you in 9 to 12 months or 36 months later. So what we find is again, if you're helping your customer, you get them into what we call a life cycle, meaning they're going to buy servers and storage 1 year. The next year, they may move over and take a look at their networking. And then the third year, they're looking at normally peripherals. And then in their fourth year, they actually go into what we call a maintenance mode, where they're just doing upgrades, just small upgrades at the component level. Mm-hmm. So for us, understanding that life cycle and bringing customers into it, we're able to add that value and that foresight to say, no, you don't have to buy hardware every year. That's not required. Buy what's going to take you to 3 to 5 years down the road.
Right.
And you can do that with refurbished hardware as opposed to necessarily new hardware, again, depending on your budget.
And for you, what's the most rewarding part of the job?
Wow, I get so many. They're everything from seeing my sales team grow, watching us grow operationally, because I'm really tied to multiple points within the business. So it's combination. If you're looking internally, what makes me the happiest is working with the account managers and seeing them grow as professionals. With customers, it is that new engagement. It is that new interaction and kind of putting the chess pieces together so that hey, this is where you want to go, and we align correctly so that business flows in a manner that's best suited to them, not necessarily always for us, but it that's what really gives me satisfaction.
Right. I would imagine you've got to see over the years that some companies that start out with small needs and all of a sudden they're ginormous companies now.
Case in point, the gentleman here in Georgia that we've been working with, he's been a customer now for 3 years, and it's been a slow process to get to this point where all of a sudden we're seeing recurring revenue at just phenomenal levels. Mm. And it's good to see that level of trust, right? Because that's what it comes down to, is how do I trust my vendor, and how do I get to know my vendor, and how does my vendor get to know me? And it's a one-to-one relationship, and it is going through those trials and those challenges and saying, hey, this is what we recommend. And once they start to trust the recommendations that we offer and they see the benefit from, that's where you know. You say, okay, now we're really going to start to see some exciting things happen. And it's really to the customer's benefit. And sometimes you almost feel like, am I pushing them faster than they want to go? And it's really comes down to what's their comfort level. And we try to work within that. But yeah, that's a great question for me. And it's so rewarding when I have time with customers. And I was in Dallas yesterday with a customer, and we're trying to do a solution for them. It's around $574,000. And so all hardware, software, and services. So we will do it all. We'll stack it, rack it, and spend time at the end. Hopefully we'll get some time with their end user as well. But if not, we'll make sure we're checking in with them to see where can we get better, because that's the other side of it.
Now, what's the pain that a customer is feeling where they go, I got to call the folks at Aventis?
There's two. A lot of times it comes down to, why am I not seeing what I expected from my hardware? Or in many cases, I had hardware fail. And because my hardware is 2 to 3 years old, or in some cases older, the OEM may no longer have that specific hardware. And the customer says, you know, I don't need to go buy new. And so they'll come see us and they'll call us, and we'll spend time talking to them about, hey, what are you doing? What applications are you running? And they prefer to go what we call like for like in the hardware. And we match that hardware configuration, we ship it to them, and suddenly there's that trust starting to build. And we will over time talk to them about where they're going within their infrastructure. We'll have a one-to-one discussion with the engineer, align the engineer with us, and then work with the business to figure out when is the appropriate time to talk about uplifting and changing, and do you want to go into, be it additional hardware, or do you want to go into the cloud? And we're able to provide that. And the most important part, a lot of customers, as we talk to them, fail to take advantage of what we call replication or disaster recovery. And you protect everything in your business. Everything is insured with the exception of your data if you are not doing replication. And so we work with customers to help them understand that, and we'll bring them into our environment. We'll host them in our environment just for replication, because we understand that if you don't, the day that you don't, something will happen. Someone will spill coffee. It's never a major thing. It's always something small that happens. Someone will have a spill of water, and all of a sudden you fried a motherboard, and is your business going to be down now for 3 weeks while you wait for Dell? And we can turn a server around for you in 2 to 3 business days. If you need a server tomorrow, actually I can build and test, implement, load your software, and ship it to you tonight. So there's a lot of things that we can do for you, a lot of things we can do to help. And I would say, just in IT, in our space, the real thing that helps customers is comfort. And so I would say, if you have an IT partner, be sure to find out, what are their warranties? What are their delivery services? If they have a service level agreement, what are those things that are included in that service level agreement? And become comfortable talking about your infrastructure. Doesn't mean you have to buy anything. I think you need to talk about it so that you understand what you have and what you need to protect.
So how does the whole sales and marketing thing work for you guys so that you get to have this kind of conversation with a prospective customer? Because I would think if they got to sit down with you like we are, you know, what a great relationship. That's the foundation for good business. You mentioned earlier, you know, the customer calls. Does that happen? Does that happen enough? Or do you have this whole marketing machine you got to put into play too?
I've got both. I've got a great team. Tiffany Bloomer has done a phenomenal job in building our marketing team. And I give kudos and hats off to her, because she's the one that brings leads to us. We have multiple channels that we go to market in, everything from eBay to our web presence to GSA for state and local and federal government. It really is a combination of all of those pieces working together to bring leads into our business. And for my sales team at that point to follow up and start to build that one-to-one relationship. You can't do it without a great marketing team. And our marketing team really puts us in a lot of great places where new prospects can see us. All of a sudden, that prospect comes on board and just calls in or touches us on the web. And now my sales team can add additional value by simply answering a question.
Yeah, because the early stages of this for you, it's a lot of listening and a lot of relationship building, right?
Just simple relationship building, one-to-one. Just, again, building trust through engineers sometimes is a bit of a challenge because it's just their nature to be a little apprehensive.
Right.
So we spend a lot of time just talking to them about what do you have going on? What is it that you're looking to accomplish? And my engineers, all of a sudden, once they have an idea of what someone wants, we then can put them into two solutions. We can go, here's a new option for you. Here's a refurbished option for you. So at that point, the customer has the decision to make. And we're able to sit with them and help walk them through that. We don't spend a lot of time on really pushing what we think is best. That's not the idea. The idea is, can we map to what you have today? And then can we take that roadmap and move it forward with you as your business scales?
Is one of the knowledge gaps that you run into early in a relationship like that around this whole business of cloud, you know, because I know everything you need to know about it, but Lee, he's, you know, he doesn't have a clue, right? but no, I don't actually. And I do find many aspects of it confusing. I like the general idea. I'm under the impression that done properly, if you have some sort of cloud strategy, there is quite a bit of peace of mind that should come along with that, because if everything just goes to hell in a handbasket right now, we can recover pretty quickly. But yeah, so speak to that a little bit, if you would.
So absolutely. So a cloud strategy for us, a lot of people, to include us, have what we call a hybrid strategy. So if you think about it, the cloud is nothing more than the hardware itself being virtualized, meaning that you're no longer what we call on the metal. So you're able then to take applications and launch those applications without actually having to buy a new piece of hardware. So if you think about that, the cost of entry point of cloud is about the same as hardware. It's actually about the same. But once you are in the cloud, once you've established your cloud environment, if something fails, it's nothing more than rebuilding it in that cloud environment and moving it over to what we call a new hosted server. You actually create a new server without having to buy a new server.
That sounds attractive.
Yeah, exactly. So again, that's why the cost on the entry point is pretty much the same as buying new hardware. But over time, the efficiencies that you get from the cloud are enormous. So a lot of people have asked, well, Carl, if the cloud's such a great idea, what's going to happen to hardware? And I tell them, you missed a key point that the cloud runs on the hardware.
It's not really a cloud.
that's the most phenomenal part is really getting people to understand that the cloud is hardware.
Right.
But it's partitioned off. So components or pieces of it can be utilized or maximized in a way that you couldn't just do with a server. So the cloud really became a way to optimize your spend. And we try to really get our customers to understand that. And from a disaster recovery, it allows you to stand up so much faster. Just to, here's my data, move my data over. Hey, you got your new hardware, great. Because your hardware, we fried it in some capacity, something happened. So suddenly we're back in, you've got your metal, everything's ready to go. We just move your data back over and you're running again.
Right.
Versus, okay, it was hardware. You didn't back anything up anywhere.
Now you got to recover it.
Well, there's nothing. You didn't back it up.
So there's nothing to recover.
So now take your $35 million business or take your bootstrap $2 million business. Where do you go now? Because now, where's your customer information?
Right. You got nothing.
You have nothing. And that's the most critical component to your business is your data. But yet, very few people protect it. And so we're constantly reminding our customers, listen, if we need to add 2 terabytes. We need to add another terabyte of data. Because if they don't protect it and we're not reminding them of it, shame on us. We're not being a very good partner. So it's a partnership. And once the customer comes to that realization, you're no longer finding yourselves.
Right. You're not a vendor anymore. You're a partner. That's a lot different.
And the IT group finds that, you know what? Because we work in the hardware so often and we work with new and refurbished, suddenly it becomes that confidence component with them where, wow, they've got great ideas. They do this every day.
Right, and they're watching my back.
Exactly.
So now if somebody wanted to have a more substantive conversation, website for you guys?
So it's AventisSystems.com, A-V-E-N-T-I-S, systems.com. The number, if you'd like to call in and speak to one of the sales reps, is 866-528-9313, and it's option one. You'll get any one of the sales team members, and they'll gladly answer any questions you have, and they'll absolutely want to listen to you and to better understand where you're trying to go.
Well, thank you so much. I've been telling Lee for years, we cannot remain strictly confined to On the Metal. But now I think
you've said that.
I may be paraphrasing.
He's a bit of a metalhead.
Listen, I think we all are. Technology is a great way to, again, move your business forward. I spend so much time talking to groups and talking to people and the CIOs, and we all agree, I think if people understood it better, that it would they would take and spend more time investing in their hardware.
Well, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. It's been an absolute pleasure. Hang with us while we visit with our next guest, will you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Next up on the High Velocity Radio Show, we have Senior Director, IoT Solutions Engineering and Product Marketing, Mr. Andy Davies with Flex. Hey, man, what'd you learn in that last segment?
Yeah. I learned everything that we're building at Flex. Yeah.
Now, talking about Flex, weren't you used to be Flextronics?
That's right. So for those that don't know, Flextronics are traditionally known as a contract manufacturer or an electronics manufacturing service provider. We've evolved now to be a new company. We're still that $25 billion company with 200,000 employees and, you know, 100 facilities in 30 countries. But we've evolved to become more of this sketch-to-scale solutions company and services company. And what that means is Flex doesn't just make the product based upon the specifications of our customers anymore. We actually help them innovate. Mm-hmm. So they come to us with a sketch, whether you're a large company, whether you're a small organization, a mid-sized organization, we can actually work with you from coming out of that ideation phase of a product. We'll actually work with you on that innovation, that design and engineering. But still leveraging all of the capabilities that the old Flextronics had as a new Flex through all of our supply chain services, distribution, logistics, etc. So we're the new version of Flextronics as Flex, and we're a fascinating company doing amazing things.
Just getting that URL is an achievement.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Congratulations.
There's some stories to tell there. Yeah, for sure. It took a while, about 2 years. Yeah, we got it though.
So now, you mentioned sketch to scale solutions. How does this play in that kind of Internet of Things world?
So it plays right into the Internet of Things world. Now, the Internet
is that what it's called? Do you call it that?
So IoT is a term that everybody's becoming more familiar with. Mm-hmm. We're surrounded by IoT, which everybody calls the Internet of Things. Flex has trademarked the intelligence of things. So clearly, it's about the internet. Clearly, it's about connectivity and everything in our lives and everything in the world being connected. But it's actually about the intelligence of those things. Mm-hmm. And the reason that companies are interested in it and consumers are interested in it is about the intelligence. It's about that data. It's how it can improve our lives. I mean, Flex's mantra is live smarter. And we believe that people can live smarter in so many different ways by leveraging technology. And we're bringing that to market for our customers to make their products smarter and better, but ultimately make the lives of people in this world better as well.
Because a lot of times the customer might be manufacturing something and they may not connect the dots of how it can be leveraged through the internet. Is that true? Like, is that areas you help them and kind of
that's correct.
Maybe
yeah.
Push them a little bit in ways they hadn't thought of?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think like a lot of companies, I mean, there's a lot of traditional companies out there have been building products. I mean, we've all had watches, right. Obviously, over time.
There was a time a thermostat didn't connect to the internet. Yeah, you remember that? Maybe when you were a kid.
Well, maybe a little older than you think. But I do remember that. Actually, I only just replaced, and believe it or not, in this film, I only just replaced my dumb thermostats with Nests recently. So, yeah, we all know Nests. And so the companies now, they're looking at the products they've got, and they're saying, hang on a minute, I can make this smart and connected, but how?
Right.
So we do help them.
And why?
And why? Yeah.
Well, right, that's a lot of more important.
Why, but everybody expects things to be connected now. Yeah, we are helping companies look at their portfolio of current product lines.
Right.
And saying, how can we make them smart and intelligent? So you think about your HVAC system at home.
Right.
Never mind just the thermostat. Think about your HVAC system, or even if you've got a tankless hot water heater, for example, or an appliance in the home, any appliance. There are benefits from it, benefits to you as a consumer and the company providing that product to you about it being connected to the internet.
Right, because I'd like to be able to, for that waterless, what is it, the water heater.
Tankless
when my
water
kid,
heater. Yep.
When my kid's taking a shower, I'd like to make some adjustments.
Reduce the cost of the home.
Exactly.
Yeah, not sure your kids would be too happy, but yeah, that's it. Don't put it up, put it down. Right. Yeah. So, and so it's about controls. And we as a consumer think about those controls that you want to have remotely as opposed to going into the garage and getting to the tank or whether it's housed in a closet. It's about getting to it remotely, but it's actually more than that. It's about maybe now, rather than you paying, let's say an annual fee to a HVAC or a tankless water heater service provider who says, yeah, pay me $200 a year and I'll come out and service it twice a year. It may not need servicing.
Right, but you're on some rhythm.
Yeah, you're on some rhythm, paying some dollars.
And now
out.
I got to leave work and go and let this guy in. And, and it may not even be necessary.
Exactly. I mean, my house is 2 years old. I don't think my HVAC service is needed every few months. So instead, let them monitor it and diagnose errors in that system remotely.
Right, even before, or like even a symptom before it's happened.
Exactly. Now, you find something's wrong, you contact the service provider in this current world. Mm-hmm. They come out, they take a look, they say, I haven't got the part for you, I've got to go back
to
the
shop. Right, now a week later, you got to let them
in. Now they're going to contact you and say, hey, Lee,
there's a problem.
I know what the problem is. I'm coming out. I'll be there in a couple of hours. In fact, maybe if you trust that person, you can let them in remotely via your phone through a smart home automation
through your
system.
Door, right.
You can stay at work and keep adding to the community problem. Yeah.
So can you share some, so you mentioned this story, but do you have some client examples where you were able to kind of help them get into this world? Maybe they weren't there.
We're helping every client we're working with right now, but just for the, for the audience's interest, we're producing 80% of the wearables in the world right now. So Fitbit is a customer of ours. So we build all the Fitbits. Many other wearables.
I have one right here.
It looks great. So we're obviously working with Fitbit. We're in every single industry from healthcare to automotive. So, those wing mirrors that you they're flashing and telling you there's a car on the right-hand side. We're in that business. We're in smart home automation. So if you know of a company called Wink, which is similar to SmartThings, Samsung SmartThings. Yeah, that whole smart home automation system.
Right.
That's a company owned by Wink. And we're developing not only the gateways, but also those endpoint devices for people. But so I'll give you a good example of Google Chromecast. That's one that I think everybody's heard of.
Yeah.
Built right here, designed, engineered right here in Atlanta, Georgia.
Really?
Out of the Flex office, yeah.
Google Chromecast.
Wow. Yeah, probably one of the first IoT devices, I guess. It's quite old now. You got the Fire Stick and things like that. But Google came to us and said, we've got this idea. We don't know how to do it. Can you do it? And so the design engineers in the Atlanta, Georgia office, they got together, looked at what was needed, using a lot of the streaming expertise, video streaming expertise in that office, and we designed it and built it from scratch, and it's been a huge success and has led on to many more innovations within our company and for other customers too.
That's one of Stone's favorite things.
It is? Yeah.
Are you kidding me? I love it. I use it every day. Oh, yeah.
It's a great device.
I'm now in an apartment because the house burned down a few months ago and all that stuff. So we're on a different TV system. I can't figure it out for ordering movies. But if the movie is out on that, it's also out on Google Play. I go grab the Chromebook, fire it up, bada boom, bada bing, we're in. I love that thing.
There you go.
So now, how are you kind of seeing the consumer adopt it? Are the consumers adopting it at the same speed as the companies are throwing out? It seems like because everything's now an Internet of Things thing. Yeah. You can go to Costco, every aisle's got something that can wire to my house. Are consumers actively using the stuff as much as the people that are producing it?
That's a good question. I think the answer is probably no, to be blunt about it. I mean, I think that we are companies like Flex and our customers are ahead of the curve.
Right.
But we have to be. We have to innovate.
You got
to
keep pushing, right?
Absolutely. We've got to help our customers put these products on the market because, we didn't know we needed an iPod that stored 1,000 songs until it was available to us. So we're going to help our customers put these products out there for consumers so that their lives can become better and smarter. The adoption is maybe not as fast as we wanted, certainly in areas of wearables. In fact, we've seen a huge surge of wearables, only to see it then sort of tail off recently. And I think companies are struggling in that area. But I think you'll see that fashion wearables are going to come more right. prominent in the marketplace. Maybe Pandora will put a smart little charm out there or something which has, you know, digital images associated with it. I don't know. Smart watches will come back. They'll become, you know, Fitbit will probably start to advance not only in just wearables for consumers, but healthcare. You know, being able to measure, you know how you are at home and elderly care.
I think it's a huge opportunity in elderly care just to know where they're at, if their vitals, heart rate, you know, blood pressure. If you can kind of do that in an elegant manner where it's not that intrusive.
That's it.
That and it communicates to the doctor so they can get ahead of it.
That's it. And so you'll see innovations in smart home automation where you've got things like Wink, which is a gateway which talks to all these smart devices to make your home intelligent. You know, it's a bit of a DIY model right now. You've got to go out there and buy
right,
these products.
And you got to install it yourself.
And it's costly. Like, right. You know, I haven't done it yet.
You're in the business.
I'm in the business. But what I see the value of that is in an elderly care facility or maybe giving it to my parents so that I can monitor and assist them. And you start to see all these industries connect in terms of has somebody had a fall at home, whether that might trigger the door to open and then actually
Let
the neighbor in or trigger to the healthcare provider that somebody's having issues. It may call the ambulance and it may then open the door to let the paramedics in. I mean, you sort of connect all these dots and that can only happen if all these things are
available.
Yeah.
Now, is the problem that the consumer just doesn't trust it? Like what is their hesitancy in this, do you think?
I think it's cost.
Is it cost?
I mean, cost for sure. Wearables are still somewhat expensive. Yeah, there's a different range that you can go from obviously the Apple Watch. Yeah,
but like I've seen that, the doorknob thing, where like there's a camera, it's going to tell me who's the person. I don't have to be there. I can talk to them as if I'm in the house. Like it's all this stuff. And it sounds great. It just, I mean, I guess for me, it's the hassle factor. Like, do I have the skills to install that? I guess that comes into play. But is I'm just wondering from the psychology standpoint, how much of it is that too intrusive?
I think it is intrusive. And I think people are, like, it probably isn't intrusive, but people are concerned about it.
Right.
So there have been issues with, you probably saw in the news, there was baby monitors, which had been hacked. So people could essentially access the baby monitor and see your child at home and essentially see you and talk to your
that's
child.
Like,
that's a concern that people have. Right.
It's the creepy factor.
It's a creepy factor. Yeah.
When you're whiteboarding this, you have to have creepy as one of your criteria.
So what companies like Flex have to do is we have to think about the security.
Right.
We have to think about security at the device level that we're manufacturing for our clients. We have to think about the passing of that data between a device and say a mobile device and to the cloud. And we have to lock that down throughout all those channels. And so actually what Flex has done there to help clients with this is we not only produce and manufacture these smart devices now, we've actually launched some more technology in terms of IoT platforms. So we've actually said, okay, we can not only do the firmware which makes these devices smart, we can actually connect them to the internet. We can provide the cloud services as well. With all of the monitoring and diagnostics and being able to provision devices and authenticate users and provide all the security features. So we decided to put that in place. So we're now going not only beyond just sketch to scale, I also call it device to decision. Mm-hmm. How can we provide all of that IT solutions and cloud services to our clients as well? So we've embarked on this, and that's also housed out of Atlanta offices here. We have an entire development team and product management team, and my solution engineers are out there working with our biz dev people to promote this to clients. So they're not just getting manufacturing and logistics services, they're getting IoT platform services as well.
So now we've talked about IoT in terms of like energy use, saving energy or in that manner. We've talked about it in healthcare where it can literally save somebody's life if used properly. Are there any other kind of areas that you guys work in?
So many industries. I think the energy is an interesting one if you take it beyond, you know, take it further into things like solar. So actually, there's a fascinating company we're working with called Nextracker. So everybody knows about renewable energy, but solar is becoming very, very large. And we actually have a customer called Nextracker. They don't make solar panels. They actually make this tracking device, which actually optimizes capturing of solar rays and harvesting those rays, storing that energy for future use. And so they've actually deployed IoT capabilities right down to these trackers in the field that tilt the solar panels to an individual panels and rows of panels by, you know, certain degrees in order to optimize the capture of those.
So it's just like following the sun.
It's not just following the sun, because traditional solar panels will follow the sun. You know, they're on a timer and they track. What Nextrack have done is deploy the technology to tilt individual rows and panels so that an entire farm can actually optimize the gathering of more solar. And
so it's more of a scalpel than kind of a sledgehammer.
It is, and also operate it remotely. So you want to do a software update or tilt those trackers, you have to send a field engineer out. Through an IoT platform, I can be remote, and I can send a certain command down to an individual row or an individual panel, and I can also do maybe a security update to a particular panel if there's been a breach, for example. And that's other things that we're involved in. There's NERC-SIP compliance, which off the top of my head, I can't remember what that stands for, but it's all to do with the North American energy security practices that have been put in. And we have to help our customers in many ways be compliant with new regulations.
Right, because it is kind of a double-edged sword. The more that you're letting the remotely control something, then the more somebody can remotely control something that's not you.
Exactly. Yeah. So security is pretty huge everywhere. Exactly.
All right. This is all very fascinating, but I got to get the backstory, because I'm operating under the impression that when you were in school, this field didn't even exist, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
So I got to hear about the career path, the backstory. So on
my,
you.
My own career path.
Yes. Yes.
Well, I believe it or not, I'm not from Atlanta, Georgia.
I thought it was a Smyrna accent, but I wasn't sure.
So I'm from Northampton, England. I actually started my career in supply chain. So working for the largest cash and carry company called Booker over in UK, England. And then I started working then for a demand supply planning software company. They offered me a job in Atlanta. Thought it sounded like a great idea, packed a couple of suitcases, never been to America before, and headed over here January 2nd, 2002, I remember the day.
Wow.
And from there, I'd worked for SAP, Infor, many of the large...
So you can't keep a job?
I can't keep a job, that's it. That's just got to keep moving.
Short attention span.
Exactly. But Flex was actually one of my clients when I ran my own company, which was called DWG in Atlanta for about 4 years, and they were a client, and I gradually evolved, and I guess they encouraged me to join them is the story. But it was only a year and a half ago where, working in the Atlanta office, I got to really work with the engineers, and I'd never done hardware before, but really understood what they were doing and realized that, if we combine all this hardware with the software capabilities of an IT platform, Flex is going to have even a greater opportunity to service our customers more from hardware and software.
Right.
And that's really the new age of Flex.
So now, what are you charged to do for your organization? Like, what's your role? Like, are you serving all the verticals, or you're just working on some solutions?
Yeah, so Flex is kind of broken down into four key areas, equal parts of the business. There's what we call high reliability solutions or systems, which is kind of automotive and healthcare. We've got CEC, which is really about integrated networking solutions. It's customers like HP, Intel, Cisco. We've got Consumer Technology Group, CTG, and you've got
IEI. That's the fun one, right?
It is the fun one. The industrial group and emerging industries is fascinating, because that's where Nextracker belongs. So we do actually operate across all four segments of Flex.
Your group does.
But we are incubated, I guess, right now is the best way of saying it, within Consumer Technology Group. Mm-hmm. So home automation, wearables, connected living type products. That's where we're kind of focusing.
Same connected car as well?
Connected car really would fall into
the automotive
group and a little bit of industrial. So even though we have these segments, they overlap everywhere you look at it. They're all over, yeah.
So now, how do you get the word out to your kind of market? Do you do trade shows or?
We do trade shows. So Flex, being such a large organization, there's a corporate marketing function that is involved in all the events around the world. In Atlanta, we obviously do local events. In fact, April 20th is our official launch date of the office. We were in Norcross. We moved recently, but April 20th will be the opening, official opening of our office in Midtown. But we do attend local events. Mobility Live recently we were at. On Tuesday the 21st next week, there is an event called Riot, which is regional IoT. I'm one of the speakers. And the whole concept of that is actually talking about home automation and telematics and things like that in IoT. But the story we're telling is actually ideation through commercialization. Mm-hmm. It's going to be held, actually we can post it later, but it's going to be held in Midtown at the, geez, I wish I could remember the name of the place was at now, but we'll send it out later. But Tuesday, there'll be this, it's open to all. You can register on the meetup. We can post it on the website maybe later. And it's just going to be a fun networking event, free beer and free food.
And it's a regional, right? This is not just Atlanta-centric. I think the folks in North Carolina are...
That's right. I think Larry and Tom are coming in maybe right. next week. So Larry and Tom started this in North Carolina. It's called Regional IoT. It's riotnc.org. And they want to start chapters that go beyond just North Carolina. They want to start chapters. Right. So Atlanta will be the first chapter.
Is there collaboration in this space? Like, do you guys get along? You guys kind of...
You better believe it. Yeah,
these guys
are great. Yeah, I mean, they're part of the Wireless Research Center in North Carolina. But they do these hackathons. They do these Riot events. They're energizing. They're full of fascinating people, from students through to people like myself in large organizations and startups. There'll be a... events during the day that I'm participating in, even at ATDC downtown, where we're doing a bit of a, let's call it a Shark Tank thing, where having startups come through. Oh. We're talking to those guys.
Is there a kind of an ecosystem here for the startups in the IoT world?
Well, I think ATDC downtown is doing a lot of that. Georgia Tech is helping drive some of that. At the opening on the 20th of April at the Flex office, we're doing a bit of a startup session as well that I'll be chairing. There's a good community in Atlanta. I think we're trying to do more. Yeah, and I think Flex wants to get involved with more of those small companies, because they're the next Cisco's for us. They're the next Google's.
Right. You don't know.
We have to work with them all. Yeah.
And that event is the Riot Atlanta event. Is at ncriot.org. There's an event page there. And it's at Five Seasons Brewing Company.
Thank you, Lee, for correcting me there.
And so that's ncriot.org. If somebody wanted to learn more about Flex, what's the pain they're having in order to call the Flex folks? Or if they've never been in this space, or maybe they're struggling in this space?
I think every brand out there is trying to either renew in some way or create new things in some way. And IoT is allowing them to do that. So,
right.
So anybody that has a device or a product of any sort that needs to be connected and smart, Flex is the company that's going to help them do that.
Or even if you dream of it, if you're not even sure how to do it.
And sketch to scale.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, because you'll take somebody that maybe has never even thought about it and have a conversation to see.
We will. We'll help them through that sort of ideation phase or that innovation phase. We'll look at their idea. They've got to come to us with the idea.
Mm-hmm.
We're not that think tank as such, but they've got to come to us with
the idea. Don't sell yourself short. There's a lot of brain power in there.
But they absolutely, we'll work with any company that comes to us with an idea that we think is commercially viable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got to do our own assessment and qualification of whether or not it's real, but we'll certainly work with any company of any size.
I cannot wait to get home with my consultant wife and start throwing out on the metal sketch to scale. I am so well prepared.
So, did we get the Flex website is what?
Well, you mentioned at the time, we got the URL. So it's flex.com,
right?
That's it. Yeah.
Good for you.
Man, that is impressive. Very nicely done. All right. And this powwow that's coming up, it's like next week.
That's right. Tuesday, the 21st.
All right. All right. And we'll get that posted when we publish. I think we'll publish that information as well. Well, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Lee, we're going to strike last with strike first. Are you ready for the headliner?
I am.
All right, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast to bring today's program home, Master Instructor, self-defense. When I introduced the program, I couldn't say these words. Self-defense.
Fitness and you don't really get
along. No, they really don't. They really don't. At any rate, without further ado, let's introduce with Strike First, Mr. Troy Logan. How are you, man?
Good, good, good. A little anxious.
Well, I tell you, you've been very patient, but it seemed like you were getting some value out of this conversation. I saw you taking copious notes. I saw you nodding your head. I saw you roll your eyes twice, but
no, Carl and Andy are good. A lot of information. But no, the reason I'm anxious is first you had me sitting with my back to the door. Which I never do. Then you got a nice young lady behind me, but I can't see her. So
she does have a weapon.
I wouldn't know that. I can't see her. So typically I always sit with my eyes facing the door. But it's all good. I feel comfortable. Now, you guys got my back.
Your company helps companies kind of through self-defense, right? Isn't that part of what your
services? We provide self-defense and personal training seminars. We do lunch and punches.
Lunch and punches.
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah, we make it entertaining. So we also do classes and private instruction, too.
And then can have you come in for a lunch? And then what occurs during that?
We can do it any way they want. It's kind of customized. A company typically have us come in, depending on the number of employees, and we'll do some educational self-defense. And what I mean by that is, first, we start off with what an accurate definition of self-defense is. And that is 90% of it is mental, stuff I call monkey brain stuff. So we spend a lot of time on that. Mental acuity, common sense, intuition, instincts, all the things that we have innately. And then we'll do some physical application, which is only 10% of self-defense. And so we'll go through
that.
Is
that the running part?
No, that's not. Well, hey, listen now. Running is a part of my teaching. Your feet are your best weapons, that and your voice. So, yeah, and we'll get into physical application, let them do some cool stuff in terms of some of the stuff, Jason Bourne stuff, I like to call it. Everybody gets enamored with that, right?
And that's no extra charge, the Jason Bourne stuff?
Or no, that's no extra charge. As long as we have somebody willing to be Jason Bourne, get beat up. But we have fun with it. It's one of those interactive things, team building things. And they learn a lot. Learn more about yourself. You learn that you're able to do more than you might have thought you could with your own body. So it's fun. We can customize it.
And so what benefits have these companies seen from having you be there?
A lot. And it really depends sometimes on the industry. There are some industries inherently more dangerous. Case in point, the real estate industry.
Right.
Agents are put in a precarious position. They're out in houses, vacant houses with strangers that they haven't really properly vetted out yet. Insurance agents, same way. Social workers. You name a lot of industries where people are put in vulnerable positions. So feeling more confident about your ability to handle a potentially dangerous situation, it's a great confidence builder. Self-confidence, the way you feel about yourself, the way you see other people, the way you view your environment, all those are important critical factors when it comes to self-defense. Employees who feel better about themselves in their workplace are more productive. Mm-hmm. So it helps the employer in that regard as well. And then there's a physical benefit too. There's a fitness component to that too. Being able to actually hit someone, or even if you're in a situation where you have to defend yourself, you have to be able to use your body and use it correctly. So the benefits are enormous. And we have repeat customers because of that.
So now, I would imagine like a real estate firm where they have kind of a flow of real estate agents coming and going, that would be kind of a regular activity that they should consider.
Periodically. But here's the thing is those industries are just like we are individually. We tend to be reactive when it comes to self-defense. We almost wait till something bad happens, and then we want to do something.
Then they're like, yeah, we should have fixed that.
Yeah, we should have did it, right? when it comes to self-defense, it's better to have it not need it than need it not have it.
Right.
Because when you need it, it's often too late. I mean, you can talk to anyone who's been through something, and a lot of my clients have been through
something. Have you ever been through something?
No. I'm talking about a sanctioned fight. Yes, I have. But on the street, someone being attacked, no. And I spend all of my time trying to avoid that. That's what self-defense is. Especially my Georgia Tech students. I got a lot of 18, 20, 21-year-olds who kind of, they think they know more than they do. So they're enamored with the whole physicality of self-defense. And I tell them, so listen, so they always ask and say, when's the last time you've been in a fight? You ever been, accosted by someone or attacked? I said, no, I spent all my time trying to avoid it. That's what self-defense is.
Right.
Self-defense is not physically engaging. It's avoiding it at all costs, right? My ultimate objective always is to get home safe. And every one of my clients hears that all the time. It's to get home safe. That might entail running, screaming, begging, pleading, whatever it takes, but that's self-defense. So I don't want to get in a physical altercation. Every time you engage with someone physically, there's an opportunity for you to die.
Right.
And I'm not into dying.
My dad used to say nobody wins a fight.
No one does, right? And for me especially, because it's going to go bad. Either I'm going to hurt the person, right? They're going to hurt me. Either way, my life is interrupted.
It's bad for business.
It's bad for business, yeah. Can't make money, right? Laid up in the hospital, so it's not good.
There you go.
So it's no value in that.
So do you have any tips you can share with our listeners on just how to protect yourself? Maybe let's take a couple of scenarios. Say you're this real estate person and you want to add a location.
Yeah, vet them out. Have safety. Every office should have safety protocols that all the agents abide by. Very few do. I always ask them, what are your protocols? How do you handle situations? How do you vet potential clients? If you think about that industry too, it's like some others. You want to come across as attractive. You want to come across as successful. So you'll see their profile pictures, a lot of bling, right? They look successful, but that's attractive to bad guys. What we sometimes underestimate is that we spend a lot of time devoted to our careers, developing ourselves. Bad guys do too. They graduate. They get better.
Right. That's what they're thinking 24-7.
They're 24-7. How they can manipulate you. How they can rob you. How they can meet that attractive woman. Seems like she got a lot of, you know, materialism, right? How can I meet her at this vacant house and get away with it? Because here's the thing. Bad guys want three things. Your property, your body, your life. That's what they're after. One is negotiable, right? You want my property. Here it is. You can have it. But my life, it's not negotiable, right? They don't want two things. They don't want to get caught. They don't want to get hurt. So how are you increasing his chances getting caught or hurt? Because that will mitigate to some extent whether or not you're chosen as a potential victim.
Mm-hmm.
Bad guy's in the business of getting away with it, not getting hurt or getting caught. So
right.
the real estate agent needs to vet their client, and then they need to have certain things that they can do when they meet the client. You were talking about technology. That's a lot of wonderful safety apps out there now that will alert anyone of your GPS location. That will make noise. They will make panic alarms. Noise is a great ally when it comes to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Knowing where you are, taking pictures. First thing you do when you drive up to the house, take pictures of the license plate. Take pictures of the person you're meeting. Someone's at the office aware of who you're meeting, when you're meeting them, when you're supposed to be done with it. If you're not done at a certain time, the alarm goes off. They're notified. The police can come. 911, there are apps for 911 calls. So there's a lot of wonderful technology that you could use to make sure you're safe. Because, you know, you have to take your personal safety as your own. You have to take ownership of that. No one else will.
Now, how are some ways that you can kind of present yourself to be confident and, like you mentioned, your voice and your posture maybe?
80% of our communication is nonverbal. It's how you walk, right? Your posture, your body language. What are you communicating? I use this analogy. You ever watch National Geographic? I'm a big animal buff. I love animals, right? You see the lion sitting there and they're just waiting for the next meal to come by. So this herd of gazelle will go by. Who are they looking for? They're looking for the weak, looking for the old, right? They're looking at the herd to decide who's going to be the victim. So same thing with bad guys. They're looking to see who is a potential victim. Who can I rob? Who can I assault? Whatever it might be. And your body language goes a long way to determine whether or not I have that neon sign that says victimize me or not.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell my wife this all the time. When you go to the supermarket, whatever, and she doesn't listen necessarily, right? But she's preoccupied with her cell phone. She's texting. She's emailing, you know, all this stuff that we all do. But she's not paying attention. But Atlanta is like most big cities, a literal buffet of potential victims. If I'm a bad guy and I see you paying attention and you look like you know where you're going, I'm less likely to try to rob you than the next person that's going to come along who is texting.
Right. They're distracted. Their headphones on. They're looking at their phone.
I had a client. She was running an unpopular trail here, you know, all she remembers is being picked up. She had her headphones on, her beats on. She listened to her music, right? She was really into the music. She wasn't paying attention. All she remembers is being picked up. Next thing you know, she met the concrete, right? Thing that saved her was another couple was further down the trail, saw it, started running, screaming toward her. The guy ran. But it's something that could have went horribly wrong. Wasn't paying attention.
Right.
Wasn't focused on the environment.
Yeah, those noise-canceling headphones aren't that good in the public.
No, they're not. Right. No, they're not. And the cell phone is a distraction. You're right. Technology is great, but it's a distraction, too.
Right.
Don't let it distract you. Be aware. And that's that 90% of self-defense we're talking about. Situational awareness, right? Mental acuity, instinct. I call it spidey sense. You ever had the hairs in the back of your neck go off? Right? You know something's off? You feel that feeling, but what do we do typically? We ignore it or we disregard it, right? We've almost been programming our society to ignore those signals that's been part of our DNA. And why? Because we're, you know, there are social norms that we abide by. The first thing you did when you came into the lobby, you greeted me and you shook my hand. You expected me to reciprocate. I did, right? Bad guys violate social norms. They violate social space. That's why a woman will get on an elevator, a complete stranger will get on an elevator with her, and her intuition will say, something's off with this guy. She'll convince herself that, no, he's a nice-looking guy. He spoke to me. He's kind. He's cordial. And she'll convince herself to stay on there, even though intuition say, get off. And so they're victimized all the time. And bad guys take advantage of that. What's better? To stay in a steel box trapped with a potential psychopath or be rude to a stranger? Be rude to a stranger.
I'll take door number two.
But we don't do that, right? The fear of offending is greater than the fear of pain.
Man, I've already learned so much like in the last 8 minutes about self-defense. I mean, you are obviously just a storehouse of knowledge around this topic. I want to switch gears before we wrap, if I could, and talk about the whole entrepreneurial side of this thing. At some point, this became a passion or something, and you decided, and I'm interested to hear what your wife said. You know what? I'm going to run my own business, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to market it to companies. Can you tell us that entrepreneur story?
Oh, certainly.
Yeah.
Man, I've been doing martial arts since I saw Bruce Lee. Uncle took me to see Bruce Lee, right? Me and my brother started practicing martial arts and loved it ever since. Worked in the corporate world for a little while, Delta Airlines. Wasn't satisfying. You know how you find your purpose? It's like that suit that fits well, right? It just fits you. It's custom made for you. I've been doing martial arts all my life, been doing fitness training here and there all my life, friends, family, acquaintances, teaching them different things. I said, heck, man, why don't I just do this for a living and try to make some money from it? Right? It's what I wake up in the morning feeling like doing anyway. It doesn't require much of me to get up on my bed and teach someone Krav Maga, Muay Thai, boxing, whatever. I've been doing it so long. So why not get paid for it, right? That's the ultimate goal, right, for most people.
Okay, but I like donuts. I like donuts. I have no business in the donut business. I mean, so to talk about, I mean, because sometimes people say, well, I just like doing this, so I'm going to quit my job and go, yeah.
And you educate. I mean, I'm a teacher at heart, right? I love taking someone. When you have someone call you and say, hey, my boyfriend tried to kill me, right? I got a restraining order, but he's out of jail and he's found me. And he might do it again. I need to learn how to protect myself. Right. Or you have a client that calls you, has been assaulted or raped or, you know, whatever. Some heinous thing has happened to them. Well, I have an ability to impact their lives in a profound way by teaching them something that, you know, I've been doing for a long time, but can potentially keep them from having that experience ever again. Or someone who hasn't had any experience and they don't have to have that experience from what the knowledge that I can give them. So from an educator standpoint, man, this is, hey, what's better? I can impact lives.
So in getting this thing off the ground, though, all kidding aside, I mean, yeah. Did you walk in and say, oh, by the way, you know that job I have and that paycheck I've been bringing home? We're not doing that anymore.
I started doing it on a part-time basis.
Oh,
right.
Well, that's a
start teaching on a part-time basis. Put in situations where someone say, hey, can you help me lose 30 pounds or whatever? Or, hey, my son is getting bullied at school. Can you help him? Right. So I started doing it on a part-time basis. Part-time basis turned into a full-time gig when I found out, I said, wow, okay, I'm getting a lot of referrals. So somebody who I worked with a train was telling someone else, and now that referral business got big enough where I can say, okay, we can do this full time. My wife sanctioned it because she knows I'm pretty good at it, decent at it anyway, right? And she knows my passion for it, so she got behind it. So it wasn't much of a transition. It wasn't like night and day. I didn't just say, quit job, let's go. But it was a transitional period there where I was doing it on the weekends, working Monday through Friday, but on Saturday, Sunday, I'm out in my garage training someone. I said, okay, maybe we can look at doing this full time. So as soon as Delta offered me an opportunity to leave, said, give me the money, let's go. And here we go.
Oh, well, that's fantastic. Well, congratulations on that. Yeah. And the sweet spot or a sweet spot for you is this corporate market, right?
Yes.
For the team building and all the other obvious benefits. Who's writing that check or approving that expenditure in a company? Is it HR?
The HR person.
HR.
That person over the health and wellness program.
Right.
Activities coordinators. Those are the people that call me. They want something different, right? They don't want the personal trainer coming in and we're doing jumping jacks. Because the difference is, with this is, you can achieve your fitness goals, but you acquire a skill set. A potentially life-saving skill set at that. So that, right. Those are the people that call me and say, hey, listen, we got 100 employees. What would it take for you to do a lunch and punch for my employees? I want them to do more team building, more interactive. I want them to learn something that'll be a valuable skill set for them.
I want to do a lunch and punch just because the name is cool. I just
it
want to
cool,
tweet
man.
That we're doing a lunch and punch.
What's better than punching a fellow employee? Nothing.
So if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, website? Or you're
StrikeFirstFitness.com.
And then you're on social media as well?
Yes, sir.
And it's StrikeFirst. FIRST
Strike First 1ST for Twitter.
Okay.
Instagram.
And it's strikefirstfitness.com
for yes, the website. Sir.
What a fantastic way to tie this whole. Man, this is great. What a great way to tie this whole segment together. Thank you. Thank you for your energy. Thank you for what you're doing. And I want to do a luncheon punch.
I want a t-shirt. You have a t-shirt for that?
Yeah, I can get you one.
Well, thank you so much. That's a lot of fun. Thank you. All right, until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest this afternoon, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.